This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.
I've given quite a few talks in a row now, and for my own sake, I am looking for other speakers. But it seems a lot of people are busy this time of year, so there are some guest speakers, but they're kind of stacked up farther out in the calendar, but don't despair, some are on the way. So meanwhile, I think one of the most challenging things in our practice is the lesson that there's someone at the door and you're trying to give a Dharma talk. I think I might know who that is. Actually, the lesson that it's not only okay, but it's essential to leave well enough alone. Because of our human karma, this is pretty hard for us, because it's our nature to fiddle with things. In our capacity to fiddle with things quite dramatically, actually, and sometimes quite beautifully. So it might occur to us that we can fiddle with the phenomena of our life and come up with a better mix. And sometimes that might be true. And sometimes that's necessary. But from the point of view of the Buddha way, often what you get is more like just rearranging the existing furniture a bit. So you've redecorated. And sometimes that's okay. But there's actually not much net improvement, you might say. And the actual issue, the problem, if you like, usually has more to do with the fiddling itself. Which is kind of karmically impelled, and is based on wrong view. So this is not to say that we shouldn't ever try to manage or do something about our situation, because obviously sometimes we need to do that and should do that. Even that tends to be best if it's based on or rooted in some kind of intimacy with what's been called the deep background of our activity. And if we're not really acquainted with that, then it's pretty easy to get kind of tangled up in just rearranging the furniture over and over again. So, in our study of the Book of Serenity, we ran across this character, Bao Fu. And somebody asked Bao Fu, how should I clearly observe? And really, you know, the question was, how should I practice all the time? One way of talking about practice is, how should I clearly observe phenomena of my life? And Balfour said, as you're clearly observing now. And the person said, well, why can't I see anything? And Bao said, Stop poking at your eyes and calling the spots that you see flowers. So I actually thought that was a very good answer. And I'm afraid we spend, it's easy for us to spend a great deal of our time poking at our eyes. Generating spots. And then mistaking them for flowers. And of course, Dogen has a whole essay, as you know, called sky flowers, which is a metaphor for non-existent phenomena. So Baofu's questioner was having trouble with leaving well enough alone and clearly observing what was exactly happening. And instead of being able to settle with that being enough, he was busy looking for something else. So intent was he on that he decided he wasn't seeing anything. "Why can't I see anything?" he said. His view of birth and death was obscured by the spots he was generating by his restless search for something more, I don't know, dramatic? Convincing? Something that looked more like he thought the Buddha way should look? So we have a practice we call just sitting, which is a practice of not poking at our eyes. Not generating spots. Of course, you don't even have to poke at your eyes to generate spots. Many of them come up anyway. It's a practice of clear observation of precisely the phenomena that are unfolding. And gentle, compassionate resistance to the tendency to approach or avoid. To rely on the natural balance of the awakened body-mind. This is a clear observation. For some time, it may strike you that you're not seeing anything. I think many, maybe most, maybe even all practitioners go through perhaps an extended period where certain categories of Buddhist experience they expect these categories of Buddhist experience to yield up to them certain tangible or experiential phenomena that they will be able to catalog. Foremost among these, sometimes, is emptiness. And it's possible to read the Heart Sutra. The Heart Sutra of Great Perfect Wisdom as a kind of travelogue. And that one day one will be able to see such things as no eye, no ear, no nose. And one may get a little impatient. It may take a while before one realizes that one has been poking at one's eyes, generating spots. And full of hope, labeling those spots emptiness, dharmas, etc. In hope that they will be the right ones. But of course, they're not. So then ideally our exposure to the teaching will be such that the gentle Buddhas will be able to help us hear the teaching in such a way that we realize we've been doing that. And then they will encourage us to be able to set that aside and stop poking at our eyes and generating spots and be willing to maybe, if necessary, spend a little time or however long it takes to be, as they say sometimes in Western spirituality, spend some time in the desert without any particular lights and consolations. In other words, these categories of spiritual truth that Buddhism seems to speak of may need to strike one as null and void for some while, and one may need to be patient with that. when they need to be able to hear the teaching of emptiness and be completely nonplussed by it for a time. And feel that one neither perhaps knows nor doesn't know much about it. And to, as we say, sit with that without approaching or avoiding. To sit in this practice of clear observation. And in that quiet cultivation, allow the richness of the tradition to speak for itself without being prodded or squeezed in any way. That takes, I guess you could say, some faith. That the Buddhas and ancestors aren't talking through their hats, such as they may have had. But presumably, those of you here have such faith. Or you wouldn't be here. Somebody else asked this guy, Bao Fu, in order to enter upon the way of birth and death, no birth and death, sorry, in order to enter upon the great way of no birth and death, one must reach the original source. Teacher, please tell me how to reach the original source. Bao Fu just sat there for quite a while. Then finally he asked his attendant, "What did this guy ask?" And the fellow started to repeat his question. And Bao Fu yelled, "I'm not deaf!" That was the end of the interview. One could say Bao Fu's expression was rather lofty. But he, his community numbered 700, so I guess it wasn't all that lofty. People put up with that stuff. Another time, he was walking through the courtyard with his attendant, and a new monk came up and said, "Please, know, show me the great way, the Buddhas and ancestors. Bhavu said, well, if I were going to do that, I'd just bow to you. He kept walking.
Sorry, I missed the beginning part of that last.
Bhavu said, if I were going to do that, I'd just bow to you. I would just bow to you. It's true, Chanists have more fun. Sometimes, anyway. So Suzuki-roshi said, you know, it's hard for kids when they see a pond not to throw things in it. This is the same, you know. It's very hard for us to accept that although it looks like we're not seeing anything, our vision is quite full. So we get impatient and start poking at our eyes to generate stars and sparks. So then our practice of sitting still starts to feel kind of ascetic and severe. Maybe we have some long period of that before we realize it's a practice of peace. Practice of seeing things as they are is quite a complete practice as it is. Eventually, all of those peculiar Buddhist terms, those categories of meaning, they yield up their treasures, but they won't be taken by force. Dogen says, you know, the treasure house opens of itself. Not because you bash the door in. So that's an important point. have any questions this morning?
I'm not sure if it's a question. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to say, but thank you. The spots on the eyes almost sound like a disco song and a Dharma song, so that was a very great image. So you said talk about clear awareness and then
observation.
Compassionate resistance. Remember that part? I mean, it was like there's a clear awareness and then we have to cultivate a compassionate resistance not to lean into, pull away from, I think. I mean, I remember you saying that. So I was wondering if the language of the body is very opaque and you can't really, and its connection with the mind, it's like, it's always, you know, it's like, you just bow or you don't say anything or you just sit there at the source. But there doesn't seem to be a language around it other than sort of pointing. Or, so I don't know if that's a question, but it's sort of what is coming up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think I was saying we compassionately resist the karmic tendency to grab on or pull away. Yeah, that has a sort of bodily reference.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a little indirect in a way. It's more like the action rather than the energetic aspect.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really a question. It was just.
Yeah. In our actual sitting, of course, there are bodily analogies that one encounters, but they tend to be quite personal,
mm-hmm.
quite individual.
Mm-hmm. Sensation, are you saying? You mean like sensation?
Yeah.
And not always peaceful.
Not always peaceful, no. No. During retreats, I always have a sensation of a Roman centurion spear being stuck under my right shoulder blade for some reason.
old impression?
Huh?
Old karmic impression?
Could well be. But that, ever since my first session, that always happens. But I consider that quite individual. So that's something that I encounter and work with. And other phenomena like that are very, have to do with bodily dynamics, mm-hmm. but also have
influence the mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of stuff like that.
Do you sit with your one the same leg up all the time?
No, I alternate.
So it's not, that wouldn't be like a twist?
Don't think so. Yeah. So each karmic manifestation has its own areas like that we encourage people to work with, again, without holding on or pushing away. Probably, as we mentioned the other day, is probably the most basic instruction.
I found that when there's some sort of discomfort during a long retreat, it's virtually impossible not to have that take that stance of like pushing away, because you really don't want to feel that what you're feeling.
yeah, it's challenging. Mm-hmm. It's where a kind of compassionate mind or attitude is helpful towards oneself, towards this body mind. so that I can be compassionate towards my wish to get away from that, which can help create a little more space around it. It's much more difficult if I get angry and disgusted and fed up. So then I can then try and step back from that a little bit and also develop heart of compassion towards that reaction too. So that's also a big help. Usually I find there's plenty of space, plenty of spaciousness in this body mind for whatever is happening if I am patient enough to look for it.
I was just thinking about the question in the original story you mentioned about how do I see clearly, and that just seems like a pretty silly question to me. Mm-hmm. Like if you're asking that, I mean, I wouldn't even think to ask it, because if you're asking it, you're already trying to get at something that you can't try to get at. Mm-hmm. That's the wrong way to go about it. I mean, that seems kind of obvious to me, but I'm wondering if there's like something more to that. I mean, I think the answer was really good that the monk gave, but I don't know. It just seems, and also the other one, the second one you mentioned, I can't remember the specifics, but like, it just seemed like silly questions. I don't know.
Well, supposedly the questioners were both monastics, so they, to some degree, their questions were technical, and they were trying to be professional about it. So here I am, a professional clear observer. So I'm asking the teacher how to buff up my professional clear observation. And the teacher was reminding them, let's not make a weird trip about this. How about just observe clearly as you are now? And not try to grab the gold ring. How about that? The pitfall in professional monasticism is that one will try to turn everything into some kind of strange psychological trip. And many professional monastics fall for that. And Chan has a special sort of scorn for that sort of preoccupation, as we see over and over again in those stories. Yes.
I think it's that different from other professions.
Uh-huh.
Working with a trainee, who asks me frequently, I'll give her feedback on her presentations or on her physical exam, and she'll say, "But is there something I can do to be a better clinician? Is there something I could do to be?" Is always this question. What is this thing I can do to be a better clinician? My speaker said, just see lots of patients.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you need to do to be a clinician. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the practitioner is not unique in saying, all right, there's this thing that's separate from everything else I'm doing that will be the key.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, a bit like Master Yunman saying, have you had breakfast yet? Yes. Well, then, please wash your bowls. It's typically on that level, repeated over and over and over again. And that, again, translates to quit poking at your eyes, okay, to generate stars. There's quite enough to deal with without that. Quite enough to pay attention to. So I think next week is the merry month of May already. Mm-hmm. So I think we might try to sit a little earlier. Usually nobody shows up except the residents, but some of you might. And we'll have a little breakfast. And then maybe June, first Saturday in June, we might have a 9-to-5 event. So some of you might want to do that. So bear that in mind. And all kinds of fun things we can do. But my preference is to find the people who want to do that stuff first and then do that with them rather than sit around to do the stuff and then try to find the people. I really don't like that. So if you want to do stuff, try to like let us know that you want to do it rather than say, you guys should do blah blah. You know, tell us instead, I want to do blah blah with you. And that kind of gets the wheels turning better. Okay? So if you want to do the early sitting with us, we'll probably do that anyway because that's pretty easy because we're here anyhow. Next Saturday. We'll like probably start at 6, you know, but then we'll be done by like noonish, and you have the whole rest of the weekend to play. So it's like not too much of a chunk out of your life. And it's amazing how it clarifies the vision, like a morning rain, you know. Mm-hmm. So you'll enjoy your weekend even more. Okay. So, and you don't have to sign up if you want breakfast. Otherwise, you can just show up and sit with us. So, okay. Thanks for coming this morning. Mm-hmm.